Discover Ag podcast is brought to you by Case IH. Case IH has solutions for every challenge, equipment for every farm. Case IH is built by farmers.
You're listening to a 58 Ember production.
Good morning, Discovering Discos. This week, we discover why college dining halls have us all wondering if maybe we should go back to school, how a vegan donut cover-up outraged the internet, and how climate change is hitting the heart of Cajun country.
Welcome to Discover Ag, where food meets pop culture. We're your hosts, Natalie and Tara, a millennial cattle rancher and dairy farmer, and every Thursday we go beyond the headlines to discover what's new in the world of food. And we are coming to you post South by Southwest.
We are riding the South by Southwest high still, and we have so much to share with you guys. We're actually going to do a tell-all at the end of this episode, so you have that to look forward to after the articles.
Yes, Maddie is already in the comment section saying, tell us everything, and we will. I feel like I have no voice. I am, like, trying to recover. It is a process to recover from South by Southwest.
I think we ran a marathon. I think that's what we did, actually.
That is such a good way to put it. Actually, last night, so in like total Tara coded, I flew straight from Southwest to Moab. I'm actually coming to you live from my husband's truck on top of a mountain where I could find 4G. And I was telling someone, though, last night at the campsite that I was like, it's like a wave hitting me afterwards. And the girl was actually like, it's probably like after you run a marathon. And so it's so funny you said that. And I was like, that is a really good analogy.
Well, I know I and the discos thank you for climbing to the top of the mountain for today's service. If there are any issues or if the episode seems a little weird or off today, you guys, it's likely
Tara's fault.
Tara's Moab experience. But I think we Jimmy rigged it enough that it should be okay.
I think we're okay. But I will say, you guys, I'm coming to you from the most stunning view I've ever podcasted. Like, I am literally looking at the sun rising over the Moab Red Rocks. And I wish I could just like give that view to all the discos today.
You should put it up on Instagram stories.
I for sure will. I'll story from here. But it will have to be afterwards because I have no cell service.
Aura coded, as you said.
It literally is. I don't know what else to say.
All right, diving into the first article to discover this week, headline, College Dining Hall Food Has Become Super Fancy. So this was out of Delish, and apparently it's rampant over on everyone's favorite app, TikTok, that today's college kids have the ultimate dining options. A lot of it was highlighted in sororities and fraternities, and I never thought I'd say it, but college food is luxurious, apparently.
I was almost late to our recording because I got straight up lost in TikTok videos before we came on. Oh my gosh. It's like insane what is happening at these college campuses. Where was this when we went to college?
Not present. It was not present. I can tell you that much. You were right. I probably didn't get as lost as you in the world of, you know, college dining on TikTok, but from what I did consume, it was pretty crazy.
I'm like blown away by not just the food, but also just like the experience that they had. There's definitely some colleges that are battling it out for the best food. I feel like UCLA is up there. Harvard, Duke is claiming theirs is the best. Harvard, though, like the dining hall looks like Harry Potter. Harry Potter's dining hall is Harvard's dining hall.
Dobby the elf running around. I will say, before maybe we dive into the experience and the videos and everything, this article was talking about how college enrollment is down. And so that is one of the reasons why you are seeing campuses focus on, you know, like the food aspect of the selling point. They talked a little bit about how students now are more focused on like wellness and eating, kind of diversity cuisines, which I feel like tracks for Gen Z. The moment you said that it was beyond the food, that it was like experiences that these college kids were having, I feel like that is kind of the theme and movement of Gen Z, is like they are very like experience. I don't know. They're like experienced generation almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Back up. You've covered like too many things. I want to like put a pin in a few of those. College enrollments are at the lowest, yeah, this year that they've ever been, but tuition is absolute as highest. And I'm not going to lie, when I was scrolling TikTok, I was like, maybe not, you know, hand-carved prime rib for lunch and maybe lower the tuition rates just a little. Like, I did have that moment that I was like, I mean, maybe your marketing strategy is not working if enrollment is at an all-time low.
Yeah, I'd be fine with Tad having the experience I had with a lower dollar associated with it.
And then you said that was more, you know, they're more focused on wellness. And it really brought me back, not to like just talk about South by Southwest only, but it reminded me of our South by Southwest speech that, you know, people are more focused on health and wellness. So they want to see options. Like, you know, some of the dining halls are obviously offering, you know, gluten-free options, vegan options, like all sorts of different things. I saw one video that was actually like, quote unquote, the most unhealthy dining hall at UCLA. And when I was watching it, I was like, this actually just looks like a standard dining hall that was at my college. Like, it wasn't that bad. But obviously they're expecting very like elevated experiences.
I will say when I went to college, at least my undergrad, pharmacy school was kind of like a completely, obviously different experience. But when I went to undergrad at Washington State, I lucked out and got one. My dorm was next to the newest, I guess, like camp food campus facility. Cafeteria. That's the word.
Cafeteria.
Cafeteria is the word I'm thinking of. So I didn't have a terrible dining experience, but going back to what we've said multiple times now, I did not have what is currently out there for offering.
Yeah, I thought mine was actually pretty good until I watched these videos.
Well, yeah, because you were in a sorority.
Yeah, okay, so that's a different thing. Like, we can get into that a little bit. I was in Greek life. I was a theta. Woo! Yay! Well, I don't know. I feel like we should have some kind of like
two thetas listening. I'm sure you just connected and resonated with them.
I know. Shout out to my theta discos. But yes, we had. Stop laughing at me. Natalie makes so much fun of me about my sorority days. But yes, we had a chef that cooked for us three meals a day. 4.5 days a week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday only till lunch. And then Saturday we were on our own and Sunday we were on our own. And it wrecked me getting into adulthood. I think that's why I like struggled to cook when I first got married, because I was used to having someone cook every single meal for me. I had dessert after every single meal, and I'm not like, they were good meals, like very lots of options.
It's funny you say that, because we get ranch interns every summer. And the one we had last year, he was in a fraternity. And I knew that you guys were like served meals, but it had never dawned on me like what that would do for like not harnessing or instilling cooking skills. And the poor kid, I'm like, he's not going to survive on his own next year. Like, I mean, I think he ate almost every meal with us, and then he goes back to school and has every meal cooked for him. Shout out to Jake.
So on the other side of the scale, there's also things happening on college campuses, like not in the dining halls. Kids are actually turning their dorm rooms into pop-up restaurants. How insane is that?
Yeah, I thought that was such a cool experience. That looked like such a fun group of kids that did that. I saw that same TikTok. It made me, did you get like nostalgia when you were watching all these videos?
Yeah, kind of, I guess. I don't know. I don't know that I want to go back to college at this point in my life.
No, I don't. Obviously don't want to either, but I don't know. I love college. I had such a good college experience. Pharmacy school is probably, I don't know, some of my favorite years. And maybe it's like Tad heading off to college too, but I'm just, the videos made me like think about how much you grow as a person, how much fun you have in college. And it's probably Tad. That's probably why I was getting emotional.
I'm sure. I can like only imagine what that must be like for you. But I will say is when I was my last day of college, I was with my mom. We were like packing up my stuff and I was moving, and I was like bawling and was like, oh my gosh, like I don't want to leave. And she was like, I thought you were so sick of college. Like you've been saying like you're so ready for graduation. And I was like, I'm sick of school. I'm not sick of college. Like, yeah, I don't want to do homework anymore, mom, but like I don't want to leave someone cooking three meals a day for me. Another thing with these college campuses too, though, is like the revolution of like food trucks, which we were in Austin, which everywhere we turned, there was a food truck. But I could see those being like a big hotspot also in colleges, like a food truck. Like some college campuses had their own food trucks.
Listen, I love a food truck. If there's something I love, it is a food truck. And to think about how well they fit with like campus life, and That made sense to me. The pop-up in the room didn't make sense. And some of the other videos, I saw one where a kid was cooking like a full ham in his
Oh my gosh. What, how? Room,
which again, I, listen, it was probably purely for the virality and the clicks, which a lot of social content is anymore. We know this. But the food trucks, I think that's cool. Like, that makes sense to
me. Yeah, that's actually funny you say that, because I have in my notes that I feel like social media is changing the dynamics of food culture on campuses. Like, I feel like that is one of the big things behind this.
Yeah, you think about how we used to go out to dinner just to take photos, and now kids like sharing all their experiences, especially on TikTok. And it's such a younger generation, and it is like such real raw footage. I could see how, again, I mean, when I was touring with Tad, we toured a campus last summer that actually made the ranking for the top 20 dining lists for colleges. And that was a huge selling point. Like, they were really hounding it into us. They had the, what was it? First 100% vegan dining hall in the country. They were the first one to do it. And they also had one of the first universities in Texas to do the Big Nine food allergens and gluten. And it was like an absolute selling point. Like, I remember them really kind of like, I don't know, focusing a lot of the tour and aspect around the dining experience.
What college campus was it?
It was one in Texas, North Texas, I think. Tad was looking at maybe doing golf.
Oh, okay, cool.
He is not actually all share, because I have not shared anywhere yet where Tad is heading. And we did get he got accepted a couple places, and he was holding out for one campus. And I'm sure we have some discos tuning in from there. So we're excited to announce that Tad's going to be headed to Oklahoma
State. Whoop, whoop. What's their mascot, Oklahoma State? What do we need to be doing? What colors? Do we have good colors? Natalie, can please tell me we have good colors.
No, I actually talked with Tad about this, because I was like, I don't look great in orange, Tad, and they are orange, black, and white.
No, any color but orange. We look terrible in orange. There is not an orange color in our summer palette.
Yeah, I really should have ex-nayed his application and desire to this college. Like, we should have funneled it through an application process of what color I look best in, honestly. Maddie dropped in the chat, though, that she said lots of girls do fun black and white looks for the Oklahoma State games, and so maybe I'll have to do some research around that. Maddie also said in the chat that this generation is so inventive. Like, what? And I think that kind of sums up this whole conversation, is that we are like in a new inventive time from both the Gen Z, the kids side, and I feel like the universities, the campus experience. It's inventive.
It really is. I have two final things to say. The one place where college enrollment is up, actually, maybe there's more than one place, but one thing in particular is culinary school enrollment is up. And college campuses that are combining their culinary school with their dining halls seem to be having the most success with like nailing the food choices. So I thought that was fascinating. And then my last thing is people are sneaking into these dining halls in order to get access to the food.
Yeah, I saw that. Not just students. I saw adults too that were like trying.
Parents. You can even like buy day passes apparently, like, and go to the restaurants, which I think is just wild. I like was like, that's so nuts to me.
I feel like if we gave it a good college try, we might be able to convince a couple people we were still in college.
I did like a reunion trip back to my old college with all a bunch of girls. And one of the girls' husband had a younger brother that was significantly younger than him. And we went to a frat party with him. And when we were like hanging out, somebody came up to us, a group of boys, and they were like, are you here for mom's weekend?
You're like, yes, actually, yes.
Tears, very much tears so. Streaming down my face.
It's giving moms at college. That's what we're giving.
It was bad. It was bad. Embarrassing moment.
When you crawl into bed at the end of a long day, there is nothing better than getting into soft, luxurious sheets. That's why Natalie and I are sleeping on Cozy Earth sheets.
Cozy Earth crafts luxury goods that transform your lifestyle. They have been featured on Oprah's Favorite Things 5 years in a row. They are worth the cost. You guys, not 5 minutes into sharing on my social media that I was trying out the Cozy Earth bedding, I received a DM saying, quote, oh my gosh, your life will be forever changed. Only sheets we will ever buy.
Beyond just the sheets and bedding, Cozy Earth also has loungewear that comes in a variety of styles and colors. I've actually had a pair of their pajamas for more than 5 years, and I wear them nonstop. They still look so amazing and feel great.
All Cozy Earth products come with a 10-year warranty, and Cozy Earth was kind enough to provide an exclusive offer for you guys, our discos. If you go to www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER, you can save up to 35% off site-wide.
So one more time, that's www.cozyearth.com and use code DISCOVER to get 35% off site-wide.
All right, diving into the second article to discover this week, headline, How a Vegan Donut Cover-Up Outraged the Internet. There's more than one hole in this story. So this was out of Food and Wine, and it's another Discover game of Clue. To set the stage, we have two restaurants. We have Cindy Snacks, which is a vegan food market in Long Island, and we have Savory Fig, which is another restaurant that kind of makes the gluten-free vegan donuts for this Cindy Snacks. Now, here's where the crime was committed. Okay, you guys, it was on March 3rd, an Instagram post was put out by Cindy Snacks that shared that they received their morning order from the Savory Fig of donuts. But in their order was one very suspicious Dunkin'-looking donut.
Dun, 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 dun.
I mean, I can't believe the outcry over this donut.
So,
but it's serious, though. I can't.
Okay, two things. I think two things are true. It is actually really serious because people are coming to this storefront, this Cindy storefront, Cindy Snacks, to get like groceries that are gluten-free, dairy-free because of allergies. Like, it's not just because they're wanting to like be vegan. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that also just want to be vegan, but some people are severely allergic. So it is like scary and dangerous. At the same time, I'm also not surprised that this is going viral. I feel like it is so crazy how the internet can take a tiny, small story and turn it into like a nationwide sensation.
Mm-hmm. Especially with big players involved. So I think one of the big reasons the story spread like wildfire is because a major vegan baker on TikTok kind of recounted the chain events. And I think that's where it started, like, was the kind of the taking off point. And this poor Cindy Snacks, I don't think they wanted to take the appropriate measures and do the right thing, but they did not want this to go viral. And I do not think they wanted to be the light, spotlight shown on them like they currently.
Yeah, because I would guess, I wonder if some of the backlash is even negative for them. And so I feel like, yeah, they did not realize what was happening when it like went so viral. And they are actually taking legally appropriate measures. They contacted like the New York State Health Department and said, like, you know, this person is promoting this, you know, selling these products as one thing and are not. So I will say, like, while they went to social media, they also took the right steps.
So we'll rewind a little bit because they didn't go to the, you know, take those legal actions.
No, they did not.
The first thing they did actually was reached out to Savory Fig, and they put a post of this up. It is also still on their Instagram page. You can go see it as a screen recording of the conversation. And so I do feel like they handle this appropriately, looking at the whole big picture. I think crisis management is like a really big thing that people don't often think about. And today's age, I feel like restaurants and companies should think about it more with like social media and how you do. Like, this is a perfect example of how they probably never thought they would have to deal with the spotlight on them in this manner. But I think they did a really good job because they reached out. They said, hey, like, there's this donut in here that doesn't look right. Like, can you confirm? Can we set these out this morning? Like, we're nervous to set these out. Can you confirm if we should or not? And the text exchange back and forth was very minimal. The, you know, owner of the Savory Fig was not really responding. She was like, well, if you don't want to put them out, don't put them out. Like, it was a very intense questioning on one end and very casual responding on the other.
Yeah, she was super casual. So he actually asked her to take a picture of the sprinkles that she was using. And instead of sending a picture of like sprinkles at her bakery, she sent a picture of Amazon, like where you could order them on Amazon. But the link she sent wasn't even the correct ones. Like, it was all the letters of the alphabet, not just D. And it was a bunch of colors, not Dunkin' hot pink.
Yeah, I think the couple was getting really frustrated too, because they were like, okay, she's not going to help. We're just going to go ahead and order these sprinkles ourselves from Amazon. And they were upset because they put this in another post. They have two posts you can go read that are still up on their page because they have since deleted everything else to do with this Savory Fig. They said they don't want to be connected with her, but I think they're leaving these two up for some reason. They've probably been advised to, but they said that the sprinkles came in and they weren't even like gluten-free on the labeling, or they didn't have like the appropriate like vegan associated with it either. And so they were upset about that. So they in turn just went ahead and did an at-home gluten test, which obviously came up positive, because hello, this is a Dunkin' Donut. Like, I don't know why they haven't noticed that.
Hello.
They're ultimate optimists. They're like, no, let's just test the gluten first. There's no way she did this to us, which probably first, because it seemed like they had been like a very long-standing relationship.
Yeah.
like, wait, how long has this been going on? I think it's been, I think she's been like donut scamming them for a long time.
Biggest donut scam of the century. Go and buy cheap donuts at Dunkin', put them in your display and label them as gluten-free and vegan. They did say that like donuts are super hard to be gluten-free and vegan. And these ones did look like absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure they tasted like fire too. Like people were like, man, you can't even tell.
Can't tell at all.
Tastes just like it. But I will say that I feel like this is when you watch like dumb crimes people commit or something. You're like, how did the Dunkin' one get in there? Like why? I can understand.
Why did you mess that one up?
Yes. Like how did that happen? How did you get that one in there? And just, I think the nerve, like, could you imagine donut scamming people in that way? I would be riddled with anxiety and guilt daily. I don't know how someone could do that.
I'm also just like cracking up at the investigation skills of the couple to be like, send us a picture of the sprinkles. We're doing an at-home gluten test. Like I would have never thought, I guess I'm not that smart. Like I would have not known what to do. But I do have one question for you. Do you think them posting it on social media was right? Because like we said that we don't think they wanted to like go viral, but yet they posted on social media. Like should they have just contacted the New York State Health Department?
I have no idea because I agree. I wonder if it was like trying to get an encouragement maybe for Savory Fig to like respond or cooperate more where they're like, listen, if you
do the right thing or like save people from going there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they seem aggressive and intense, but they seem rational. So I feel like they probably had to have kind of thought it through, like putting this on social media could eventually lead to something.
People have been investigating on social media as well. So they've been scrolling back through like Savory Fig donut store. And they said they like have been showing pictures. They're like all of their donuts are just straight up Dunkin'. Like it is wild.
Well, speaking of, again, Dunkin', the unintentional character in this storyline.
This saga.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They also are in a class action lawsuit right now. So I'm sure they're like, great, what more could our name be drug into the news right now?
More bad press. No such thing as bad press, Dunkin'.
Did you see what they're in the news for, though?
Yeah, is it the surcharge on milk? Was that Dunkin'?
Yes, that was Dunkin'. Yeah, so they are facing a lawsuit for upcharging on non-dairy milk. So they were making people pay extra money that if they wanted to substitute like with oat or almond. And it's in California, I think, but it falls under like Americans with Disabilities Act. Because apparently if you're lactose intolerant or have a milk allergy, you can be classified as like under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so that's what they're bringing the charge through for Dunkin'.
So this isn't the first time actually that a chain has. I think Starbucks also got sued for like a surcharge. Don't quote me on that. I know it was a coffee shop, but another coffee shop got in trouble for this. And I mean, their argument was it costs more. So like we have to pass that cost off onto the customer. Like it would be like when you're like, a meal has chicken on like a salad and you're like, well, I actually want steak, you know, like there's an upcharge for changing to a different item. So I think like I get that you might be gluten-free or dairy-free in this case. You might be dairy-free and need a milk alternative, but like that alternative cost more like than have water. I don't know. I think it's kind of nuts.
Oh, it's entire. I mean, I would not want to pay the extra amount. But again, going back to the last time we talked about a food lawsuit, I just also can't imagine
suing over it
to the courts. I don't know.
I know. I'm like, are those lawyers not getting enough business? Are they looking for arguments at this point? I have to know, do you have a favorite donut store? Do you like Dunkin'?
No.
What's your go-to donut?
No. I mean, I guess experience donut store I've ever been to is Voodoo Donuts.
I know I was bummed we didn't get to go to one in Austin. We drove by it and you were like, oh, there's Voodoo Donuts. Yeah. But we were in a like mad dash to someplace else.
But no, I don't really have like a favorite.
Do you have a go-to donut? Like, do you have a favorite flavor?
They're just like the plain. They're kind of rolled with sugar. Why do you?
I really love a chocolate glaze with Bavarian cream.
Oh my God. That sounds like my worst nightmare. Anything cream filled. Ugh, jelly filled.
Oh my gosh.
Out.
Wrong. No. We could not disagree more.
Okay. Well, we'll have to take this one to the Discover Instagram stories, you guys, and do a poll on Natalie or Team Tara with this one.
As we are all becoming more conscientious of what we are putting in our bodies, we should also be looking at what we are putting on our bodies and our faces. Rolling up to my mid-30s this year, I realized I wanted to step up my skincare routine. But as I was looking for products, I wanted ingredients I believed in, like beef tallow. Enter Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co.'s entire skincare and makeup line is 100% natural and uses only organic ingredients like grass-fed tallow, aloe vera, cold-pressed olive oil, and they are committed to never using synthetic chemicals, GMOs, toxins, fillers, artificial colors, or fragrances. Tubes & Co. is a husband and wife team that believes it's not good enough for you until it's good enough for their own family. They go above and beyond to source organic products made in the United States and support small family-owned farms. I personally love a wide range of their products, from their skincare line, I love the basic beef tallow balm, to the hydrating stick, and for their makeup, I love the blush and so much more. I know that Natalie uses their body wash, toner, mascara, and tons of other products. If you want to try Tubes & Co. for yourself, go to tubesandco.com, use our code DISCOVER to save yourself some money, or click the link in our show notes and use code DISCOVER.
Before we get to our last article, you guys, we do want to do a shout out for Club Discover, our once weekly email newsletter. It comes out on Mondays and we share our favorite discoveries from the week prior. We're obviously biased, but we love Club Discover. It's such a fun way for us to connect with you guys outside of the podcast in a more personal way. This past week, Tara shared a podcast she was listening to and a drink she and Dan are drinking. And I shared a phone case I absolutely love and another accessory too. So if you are interested in connecting with us personally like that, sign up for Club Discover in our show notes now. All right, diving into our last and final article to discover this week, headline, climate change is hitting the heart of Cajun country through its crawfish. So this was in Nat Geo. Shout out to Nat Geo. We actually went to a Nat Geo panel in South by Southwest.
I'm going to talk about it. So don't talk about it too much because that was one of my favorite panels. So
okay.
We'll put a pin in it. South come back Southwest. To it.
Tell all at the end. So this article, crawfish farmers in Louisiana say the 2024 crop is down dramatically due to a prolonged drought last year. So buyers are seeing limited availability and prices are more than double the usual.
Prices are more than 500 times higher. Like, it's insane.
They were saying that normally you can get crawfish about $2 to $3 per pound and they were up into like the $10 to $20 range. Absurd.
Yeah, it absolutely is insane. So why is this happening? A little bit of like the backstory. They had a terrible drought last year, which I didn't know Louisiana wasn't a drought, but it was like record breaking drought. And I'm just kind of surprised. I'm probably not surprised it didn't make the news, but it was really bad. And then they've had some really hard freezes. So it's been like a double edged sword of like hot in the summer, too cold in the winter.
Yeah, I saw a stat that said almost 90% of Louisiana was in an extreme drought, which I know so many places were in a drought, so it's probably hard to pay attention to where everywhere is in
a drought.
That's true. But I, too, didn't realize Louisiana was, and obviously very severe. We're like starting to see some major, obviously, ripple effects from it.
Yeah, so the crawfish have to burrow down into the mud like 2 to 4 feet. And then there has to be, though, like water in that mud. Otherwise, if it's too dry, like obviously they will not survive through the winter.
Yeah, summer and fall. That's when like the season where they burrow down and
they burrow down.
Burrow.
And then they got to make it to the next year.
I can't see right now, but there is
burrow. Yeah, I know. I love when we talk. We need to get video on YouTube for people because we are very hand talkers. There's always a lot happening in the back end that you guys miss out on.
It's very animated.
So something I didn't know, and I really hope this isn't like a Jessica Simpson chicken of the sea moment, but I didn't know crawfish were freshwater animals. They're like freshwater crustaceans. I don't know why I thought they were. I think they were on like the deltas where it's like changing from saltwater to freshwater. But no, they are fully freshwater animals. Other things I don't think about, crawfish farmers. When I read that, I was like, oh, I've never thought about the fact there are farmers who are crawfish farmers. And it's actually really cool. There are wild, obviously, places where they can catch crawfish. But then they also will do like, it's kind of like crop rotations that they will put crawdads, farm crawdads in like rice fields, as well as sugarcane. Sugarcane fields and rice fields on their off seasons will be farmed for crawdads.
So you went down a TikTok rabbit hole of college kids consuming food online. For this week, I went down a rather steep obsession with a account I follow, or that I, it was a new account I found. I now followed them. That is a crawfish farmer, their company.
Ooh, tell us all about it.
And they had so many videos I could not stop watching. Actually, when you log into Instagram, you will get a DM from me of video after video after video from them, because they made me think of Discover, which we can get into in a minute. But they did a recent post. They were actually kind of, it was really nice to take this article from Nat Geo that was talking about this price crisis and then go through their post, because they're extremely active. And they were giving updates of like timestamps of like, we saw a dollar drop today. We saw a $2 drop. So I want to read one of their posts that had the most recent update. It was on March 4th and it said another dollar down a pound. So why did they drop? ? Said, we're seeing prices drop in the crawfish market, and it's because there's been an increase in supply. The weather has been favorable, and there's been a bumper crop of crawfish. We're seeing really great things on our farm, and we're hearing really great things from others in the industry. So we're really trending in a great direction. So I do think there's good news that when this article was written, things were not looking great, that there was a lot of questions about what the kind of future weather would do. But I think saving grace, Mother Nature is, you know, smiling on us for once as farmers in the ag industry. And I do think we're coming out and seeing this price drop decrease, which is really great.
I was actually really proud of this article for interviewing an actual crawfish farmer and like getting their like 2 cents on it.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. I actually Googled a few and I feel like every single article actually interviewed a farmer, which it might have been hard to get information. Crawfish industry is pretty niche. So I feel like in some industries, you get away without maybe sourcing like a direct farmer to have a conversation with for content. But this one, I feel like there's probably not a lot of places you could go to have a crawfish conversation if you aren't going to a crawfish farmer, you know?
Yeah, a little bit about how niche it is. I mean, it is almost primarily Louisiana. Louisiana has about 300,000 acres that can be farmed. Texas only has 10,000 acres. Mississippi only has 100 acres. Like, it is all coming out of Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana produces 90 to 95% of U.S. crawfish. And like you said, Texas is the second biggest. And you just compared the 300,000 to 10,000. I mean, that is drastic. Like Louisiana, L.A., shout out to you guys. You're the Cajun queens. Like you, you are carrying the crawfish industry on your backs. Holy cow.
I know. Crawfish is actually Louisiana's state crustacean. They're committed.
Well, that makes sense.
They are committed to it.
That makes sense. I will say one cool thing before we go out of Louisiana. I read that they actually have an act in 2019. They passed legislature that requires food service establishments to state if they serve imported shrimp or crawfish, which I think is really cool. Obviously, they realize how important crawfish is to their state, you know, the economy. And I feel like they're there to support the Louisiana farmers and the industry as a whole.
Yeah. On a completely unrelated note, it's crazy how many different things people call crawdads, like crayfish, crawdaddy, mud bugs, ditch bugs,
crawdaddy,
yabbies, mountain lobster, mountain lobsters, freshwater lobster, and my absolute favorite, the Cajun roach.
Oh,
my face.
Okay, so this
is not good.
But that lends to what I was just gonna say. So coming out of South by Southwest, one part of our topic, you know, that we spoke about a little blip in our speech is about connection to food, you know, proximity to food and how that, you know, helps instills trust and et cetera. When I was watching this, you know, crawfish farmer I found online, I was thinking about how, okay, I'm getting a pretty consumer perspective, right? An industry I don't know anything about, learning about it. This is great. And then they started showing the videos of like the eggs and all of the details. And I was like, I don't need to know. I don't need it to be close to my food anymore. I don't need the details. I'm out. Like, I could not stand to see the eggs on that crawfish. It was too much.
Yeah. I also Googled a lot of crawfish, you know, content. And I don't know if I'm going out and eating a crawfish today. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, I would love to do a crawfish boil. Have you ever done a crawfish boil?
Yes. Do you remember, was it last week? Yeah, when we covered the dating and I said Daniel would do Wednesday night barbecues. Sometimes those Wednesday night barbecues were crawfish boils and we would wrap the table in foil. But we would do crawfish, but we'd also do the sausage, which I feel like maybe that's regional. But yeah, we would do like really good sausage as well. So that way people that maybe were not fish people or crawfish people could have sausage instead. And we'd do the corn, the potatoes, the whole nine yards, the Cajun seasoning. It's really fun.
I want to be invited to that. We're going to reinstate Wednesday nights at your guys' house, just like the good old days. Nostalgia. We're going to go back to the college days.
Oh my gosh. This is just like the nostalgia episode. I love it.
What you said, though, you said, I will not be having crawfish. I thought you were going to say, I will not be going out into a crawfish field. And I was going to say, you big pants, liar, pants on fire.
Yes, I did not say that because I think that's in our very near future.
I hope it is. This would be the perfect episode for Discover Ag. Natalie and Tara out in the bayou, farming up some crawfish, discovering the world of crawfish. I mean, I wanted to be so badly out there when I was seeing the videos. It seems so cool. It's just so different from what we do every day. And it's so fun that it's kind of like, you know, Discover Ag, right? We're such vast different industries. There's so much to learn about food. It has me so excited.
Yeah, you guys, coming to a TV near you very soon. Natalie and Tara mudding, digging down and getting the crawfish.
So we talked about how the supply, you know, the issues the drought has caused the prices to increase. But one really important thing that the article just briefly touched on, which is something that when you're in food, you think about this, I think, like when you're in the production aspect, but I think majority of people won't. But how long it would take them to recover from this, because a lot of them, the articles were saying that the farmers have to choose because they have such a limited supply right now. Do they actually sell the crawfish or do they keep that because they're concerned about having enough stock for the fields for next year's production? And that is just thinking about being in that farmer's shoes where you have to decide if you want to try and get an income from this year or reserve so that you can have continued numbers. Talk about stress. Like, my heart goes out.
They said it will take 4 to 5 years to recover if things go well. So there's absolutely like it's going to take them a while. They talked about farmers having to go out and get other jobs. Like, restaurants are not able to serve crawfish, or it's like limited, you know, like this is what we have this week. That's it. And then when it's gone, it's gone. I'm glad, though, that you saw some research that like things could be getting better, but it is definitely major areas of concern. All right. Do you think we have crawfish farmer disco? If we do,
it's
DM us pronto. We have questions. We have more questions. We want to come to your farm. So DM us if you are a disco crawdad farmer.
DM us at your own peril.
Yeah. Because then we're going to show up with cameras and you may regret your decision really quickly.
No, but we do. If you have any, you know, way to the conversation, if you're a Louisiana disco and you like have some firsthand experience with this, anything you guys want to add to the conversation, you know, it's our favorite thing. When the episode lives through the weekend and the following week, we love to go through our DMs and hear disco thoughts. So if you want to share about anything from article 1 to 2 to 3, you know where to find us and share. And stay tuned, because in just a minute, we are deep diving South by Southwest.
All right, let's get into it. We are officially...
Yeah, where do you want to start?
We're one day. We flew home yesterday. Like, we're recording this on Tuesday. I had the flight from hell. Had to leave the house at 4 a.m. But let's go back to the beginning. How did we get to getting back home?
Yeah, it's funny that you ended the trip with the flight from hell, because I started the trip with the... like travel day from
you. Really did you? We were like sharing on the disco stories Natalie's travel day, and it was not okay. So tell us what happened.
What I want to pull out of it, I think this is the big moral of the story of the travel day. You love to heckle me for getting to the airport early. We all know this. You're a stan. You like to make fun of me for my punctual, on time, early arrival. But
I was about to say, it's not punctual. You're early.
But
early.
If I had not done that this day, I would not have made it. My Uber driver, which the Dallas airport is just, it's a terrible airport. I think we can all agree on that. Every disco tuning in, could probably give their stamp of approval of that. He could not get me to my gate. And we drove in and out of the airport multiple times to try and get me to Terminal D. And if I had not left early, I would not have made my flight because I barely made it to my flight on time as it is.
But I saved the day, Natalie. I showed up to the airport, picked you up, and had a Whataburger burger for you. I'm not going to lie. I was craving In-N-Out Friday morning because we had just done the In-N-Out reel, and the episode on Thursday. So I was craving a burger so bad. I didn't get my In-N-Out burger because it was in the opposite direction of the airport. So I landed first, got the car rental, got a Whataburger, and had you ready to go. And then we were ready to rock South by Southwest.
Yeah. And I would say we started off pretty strong. So it was International Women's Day, the first day we were at South by Southwest. And so the first panel we went to was a women panel with like Brooke Shields, Katie Couric, Meghan Markle. And then I forget the fourth lady's name. I'm so sorry. And I feel like it was a pretty powerful way to start South by Southwest. I mean, we were mere feet from Prince Harry, actually more than a few feet, but he was in close proximity.
We were in the same building as him. I mean, for sure. Like, you know, yeah, he was seats away from us. Natalie shared her stories, like totally sarcastically, that you, what did you say? That you sat next to him and people were losing their mind.
Yeah, no, I didn't say I sat next to him. I said I may or may not be feet from Prince Harry. And it just goes to show people really trust what I say online. I don't think I was selling you though, because I was like, wait, people actually believe me. I thought for sure people would know it was a joke. But I don't think like the way I use sarcasm in my everyday life apparently comes out the same way that I use sarcasm online, or maybe I don't use it enough online. So sorry if I duped anyone. I did not mean to. I really thought you guys would know it was a joke. Same thing for Jake Gyllenhaal. I mentioned that like Jake Gyllenhaal was coming to our talk and everyone was like, oh my gosh, no pressure, like very concerned. And I was like, okay, if Jake Gyllenhaal was actually coming to our talk, I probably would have actually just like passed out.
We absolutely carried the bit though all the way through the weekend. I took a picture of you asleep in the session and was like, Natalie posted my stories and was like, Natalie asleep next to Prince Harry. And then you continued it with like, maybe Selena Gomez is also coming to our presentation. Like there was a lot of A-list celebs, and we had some really good fun with it, to say the least.
So on that note, let's talk about why I was maybe dozing off in one or two sessions. And you were too. Let's not just point the finger here. Because South by Southwest is overwhelming with a capital O.
It's Austin's most busy time of the year. I think they say that there's 300,000 people who come to Austin for South by Southwest. There's so many sessions, so many things. This is my area of our partnership, of our friendship. Is the planner. I am the planner. And so I had done a ton of research. I like even getting our badges. If you go to the Austin Convention Center to get your badge, you can wait forever. So I found that there was like a secret other location where you could get your badge, but only from specific hours. And so that's where we got our badge. Then I was in charge of like figuring out our schedule kind of. And I went through and starred everything at first that just like looked interesting to me. Then I had to like go back and weed through, because let me tell you, when I say I probably had 4 to 5 things for every time slot that I wanted to go see. Like that's how phenomenal the sessions are.
Yeah. To put this in perspective, you guys, so you're in like downtown Austin, and I would say the convention center was completely full of speeches, you know, meetings, presentations going on the entire time. They probably had how many area hotels that every single conference room was booked for those and going on at the same time too. So South by Southwest isn't just one like convention center, like doesn't take place at one location. It is basically the entire downtown. Any place that has conference rooms and things going on has South by Southwest on it. So I get overwhelmed when I go to the women's conference in Nebraska and I have 3 workshops to choose from at the breakout session. This was probably, you could have 50 to 100 things going on at once. Maybe not 100. How many do you think was going on at once, actually?
I have so many. Like you said, you know, hotels, they also were in bars, like random bars. Like I remember one time I typed something in Google to like give us directions, and Google was like, this place is not open. It doesn't open until 9 o'clock at night. Like it's a bar. And like, it was open. Sorry, Google, you're wrong. This week, it's open all the time. And then like my schedule was so nuts, but it would tell you if you had like extra hours that you hadn't filled yet. And at one point it was like, you have 2 free hours. What would you like to fill them with? And I was like, oh, really? I do. I click on it. It was like, you have nothing scheduled from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Here are the sessions available at that time. I was like, oh, what? I'm sorry. No, I am 35 and I am not staying out till 1 a.m. going to sessions. Like, that's, I can't do that. I'm sorry.
So we did take in good sessions, but I'll say this is one thing we continually kept saying to each other. We did this wrong because we did try and go and learn. There was like amazing opportunities. Again, like we're going to get into our speech and how we got there and stuff, but it just blows my mind that like Brené Brown and Meghan Markle and Selena Gomez and like, you know, the VPs of Paramount and like just crazy people were speaking at the same place we were. So one, just like let that take. Two, we had like really cool opportunities to go learn from people and listen to people. And so we did try to do that, but it was really hard when the only thing we could think about is like, should we be practicing our speech right now? We should probably be practicing our speech right now. And I wish we would have done it opposite where we flew in, did our speech, and then enjoyed 2 or 3 days of South by Southwest afterwards, instead of how we did it, which was get there before for a couple of days and then speak and then leave.
That is my absolute biggest takeaway. Like if you go to South by Southwest and you're not speaking, like then that wouldn't matter. But we should have spoke first and then enjoyed our time.
So getting into our speech a little bit, we, you know, I was like thinking about this when we were down there. Do you remember how the conversation for us to even apply started?
So I actually applied for to speak at South by Southwest, gosh, before COVID. So like before you and I were, you know, in business partners. I mean, I think we knew each other online, but we were not like together in any way. And I obviously didn't get accepted. I don't even know. It was.
You were obviously missing your sparkling partner.
Exactly. Like absolutely not the right time, but it was one of those things that I was like, put a pin in that. We're going to come back to that. And so I had a folder saved that had like the application and like where you go to get information for South by Southwest. And so last summer, I think I got an email saying like, it's that time of year again, like you can apply for South by Southwest. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is that moment that like, I need to revisit this. And so I sent it to you. And obviously, you know, in classic Natalie Entire fashion, it was like, full steam ahead, like all in, let's do it. Like,
why wouldn't we? Which looking back, I'm like, why did we? Like, I mean, I've been told before that it's like an admirable quality I have that it's just like a make anything happen kind of attitude or just not think about it, kind of naive about things. And this is absolutely, I feel like, an example that falls under that where I don't entirely know how we got on the South by South stage, but gosh damn it, I am so proud of us for getting on that stage.
I am so proud of us. It was more stressful. It might be the most stressful thing I've ever done. When we're walking in, we both said, I am more stressed than I was at my wedding. Like my wedding, I was like low key, like I'm fine. This, I was like, I think I'm going to throw up. Like I'm not okay.
I told you I was doing yoga the morning of my wedding. I was so relaxed and like so at ease and just, it was a lovely day, which I don't think is like a lot of brides' experiences with their wedding. I like loved my wedding day. This was absolute hell. There was one point where you and I were yelling at each other in
unhinged. We were yelling at each other in a hotel lobby. I mean, we've been really high stress. Like we just, and we really, it's because we really cared about it. We wanted this to be right. And so if you felt one way about one thing and I felt one way about one thing, we were like standing our ground. But I will say, I think, and you said this there, and this is going to make me emotional, but if we can make it through that, I am convinced we can make it through everything. And there was points we were like, tension was high and I still love you. So I feel good about it.
Oh, 100%. So I was thinking about that because I like look back on that moment and just chuckle. And I agree. If South by South has taught me anything is that like as business partners, you and I can go through any, like, I don't think we could be tested more, hopefully, knock on wood. I just can't imagine what would like test a business, you know, relationship more than the stress we went through to prepare for this. But I will say that we both have sisters. And I think that like plays into the role because I very much so treat you like a sister. Like you're at that level for me now. And I think that's why I was so comfortable and you were probably so comfortable to like, and again, we say yelling. I mean, it was like a sister.
Totally.
If you have a sister, you kind of know what we're talking about. So it's not like we were like berating each other, but I don't think like friends probably do that. I really don't think just like women who are friends would, you know, have, I guess, maybe spoken or like spoke like that in the moment.
But sisters absolutely would. And then 5 minutes later, they'd be like, okay, let's go crush it. We're going to go listen to Brené Brown. And I just love you, sister.
No, that is so well said. We are, it's beyond like just a friendship at this point. You're right. It was a sister fight where you yell at each other. And then like 5 seconds later, you're like, where do you want to go eat? Like it, and it just was.
Yeah. Like, can I have your.
Yeah. And I think it really was. We both know our hearts were in the right place. It's because we cared so much. And so it was like, it's not personal. Like, we just want this right. We want it done fabulously. And like, whatever we have to do to make that happen. Okay. I want to go through the process a little bit. So we applied with a video. That's how you had to do it. We did a 3-minute video of us. It got accepted into the voting then section. You guys know about the voting section because you were there with us through it. Then from the voting section, they're like, okay, they like, I think they use that as a weight. Like it's like 30% of the weight, but then they're also analyzed and then you get accepted. So we found out we got accepted in like December. It was a while. Like it was not quick. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. It was like late fall, beginning of winter. And then it was on. Like we, from January till March, we have had multiple days a week scheduled where we brain dumped everything, figured out what we wanted to say, started our draft, like refining things and getting them to this week.
Yeah, I want to say we submitted, you said that the final submission date was like August sometime, and we did not find out till December. Because I remember us being like, well, there's no point in working on it before we go like to the holidays. Like I was going back to Montana and then we had like New Year's and stuff. And so we're like, we'll just hit the ground running in January. So I remember it had to have been like right before Christmas that we found out.
Okay. I think we're going to get into our session.
Yeah, well, I was just going to give people, because I mean, we've talked a lot about going to South by Southwest and you guys have seen like our title, our headline. We've shared that on social media, but we've never really shared what we talked about. And we will be sharing like clips of the speech. So you guys will, you know, get to hear parts of it. I don't think we'll release the full speech anywhere. We've talked about like giving this speech like at other conferences and stuff. So maybe you'd eventually get to hear it live.
Yeah. So shout, if we have any discos planning conferences, we'd love to give this speech in other places. I think I actually have some things I already want to add to it and a few tweaks I want to make. But I think it's a really powerful speech, not to like toot my own horn. But yeah, so maybe coming to a stage near you.
No, we got great feedback from it, which was interesting because, I mean, we had to write the speech. It was brand new, you know, and so it was the first time we've ever given it. So it was interesting to get like audience feedback and just like connect with people afterwards. So we talked about basically fear mongering online. And so we talked about like the intersection and meld of food and social media. And how it's getting kind of overwhelming right now, like all the different reels of, you know, eat this, don't eat this, this is bad for you, this isn't bad, and just kind of that fear mongering around online content. And then we approached it like with factual information from like the farming ranching aspect.
Yeah, I think we're in an interesting time of social media and food. I think people are actually like really realizing like how bad of an impact it's having on people's mental health and their physical health, like what they're actually eating. And so it was very timely. Like I don't know how many videos in the last even week I have sent you where it's like an influencer is like, I need to share, like I have changed how I'm eating because like the internet had me so stressed and so overwhelmed. And so I think that we're like coming to the head of this, of it being a real issue.
Yeah. You just sent me the reel where someone was like a couple years ago, carrots were bad because they have sugar and now
they balance your hormones. Yeah. Now they're healthy.
Yeah. And so it's just, that's kind of stuff like that we talked about. I mean, we started, there's a reel, there's a handful of this type of reel going around. We obviously only shared one, but where, you know, someone sits down to eat and he's like, oh, I'm going to have eggs for breakfast. And then it shows like a video of someone online saying like, don't eat eggs, they'll kill you. And he's like, okay, I'll have fruit. And then it's like, don't eat fruit, it's bad for you. And it like goes through a bunch of different examples where you're like, I'm just trying to eat healthy. And everyone's telling me that all these things are going to kill me. And so we build off that. And I have to say, like you said, there are tweaks and stuff that I could already same, like see where we would change a little bit after now that we've given the speech live and stuff. But I am really proud of how that speech came together. And I do think it is an impactful, important topic, given, like you said, the time we're in right now with food online.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like another speech already that is in the back of our minds brewing that we may be submitting maybe next year or to a different conference or something. But it was cool. Going through this process really showed me, I think, like it made me explore a lot of this, like just food conversation online. And it really like opened my eyes up to like so many different things that we could and should be talking about. So I think there's going to be definitely more to come from this speech as far as where you and I want to take it.
The speech went well. We had a good turnout. We were very happy with our turnout.
We walked in and the numbers were a little low and I was panicking.
I wasn't. I was like, this is still great. I'm still happy to see. There was probably like,
yeah. And Natalie was like, that's fine. There's one person in the audience. I don't care.
Well, I bet there was like 20 when we first.
Oh yeah. No, totally. There was like 20. But then all of a sudden, like a flood of people came in. Like it was a very full room in the end. And I was really happy to see that. I had a feeling it was going to be pretty full because South by Southwest had some of these like express pass options for some of the sessions that were expected to be fuller. And they ended up like giving access to that for ours. So I was like, I have a feeling like obviously the app is like seeing numbers of like people saving our speech. And so I was really happy with like the turnout and it, and not just like actually the lady who was in charge of us at South by Southwest said it's not about quantity, it's about quality. And I will say, I feel like we had really quality people based on like the questions and conversations we had afterwards. It was really cool to meet the people and talk with people who had, you know, attended our session.
Yeah, they were very engaged, which is nice. If you're on the stage and you know what it's like to speak to like a non-engaged audience. So it was really great that they were like attentive and they were laughing with us and they were, you know, like learning and like, you know, engaged at parts that were more serious. Back to you're annoyed of hearing this. So for the most part, the day went good. We had a couple faux pas. Our clicker did not work. And so we kind of got
off on the wrong.
Like, we had to start with them changing the slides. And then she gave me the clicker mid. And I don't know what it was. I mean, you and I had rehearsed that speech over and over and over again. And I don't know if it was like me being caught up on like making sure the clicker was right or the nerves of Southwest or like a perfect storm of everything. But I, my mind froze on like, it would have been my second slide, like my second time to speak. So like pretty early on in the speech, I just, it was like nothing was working up there. Nothing. And I know it feels like hours when you're on stage.
It was like a like second. Like, oh my gosh. It was so, so fast. And you and I knew you were, and I was like, I could not remember what you were going to say there, which
you
is so weird
in front of you.
No, I had already scrolled down. Like I had already gone like already to my next spot. And so then I was like scrolling back up and that's how fast it was. Right. Like by then, like by the time I scrolled back up, you started talking, but I had already like moved on in mine. But I was like, say something, Tara, say anything to give her a cue of like a word that like would make it trigger for you. And I was like equally, and like, this is in like span of, you know, 1, 2, 3. And like you were talking again, but your mind is just absolutely racing up there and your heart is racing and everything. Yes. Like, and we also, you have to like be in a speaker green room before you go on stage. Like you have like a handler that brings you up. And we did, for some reason, like we did not go up as early as like the other speakers in the green room. And so it all just like right when we went on stage felt very rushed to me. And I will say, I think that that did not help with like the flustered feeling of like getting on stage.
No, I for sure. I mean, I'm not going to pawn it off on that. I might have still forgotten. It might have just been nerves. But I do think it was just from like 0 to 100. It was like 4 minutes till we were supposed to go on stage and we were still probably in our green room. And so they rushed us downstairs and then they like kind of threw us on stage, but she's like, I don't have a clicker. I'll be back. Just start. And so it was just like a lot at the beginning.
You are anyway, also being so hard on yourself. Like it was, I don't know. Like, I'm actually surprised you even brought it up. I like, well, not totally because you've talked about it, but I was just like, it literally was like not a big deal. Like, we are just hyper focused on it being perfect and like being exact. And so like, I'm like, it was fine. It was totally not a big deal.
No, I know. We just practiced so long and that was the only hiccup. So that in my mind, I'm like, it could have been like almost a perfect delivery of her speech if it wouldn't have been for that little hiccup. But I will say, actually, there was another hiccup because my mic stopped working towards the end of the speech. So then I had to stop.
Yes, it was just like tech issues were insane.
Yeah. But other than that, the speech itself went really, really well. And I have to say, we did work with a shout out to Grace. She helped us put together our slides and they were phenomenal. So thank you, Grace, for being like a part of our speech in that aspect, because we really relied heavily on you. And she did a phenomenal job bringing like the visual portion of our speech to life.
It was beautiful. I was like, I could never have made slides that looked this nice and professional and wonderful. And it just like elevated the whole speech because it was the visual component behind us. So yeah, shout out to Grace.
So all in all, what was your peak and did you have a pit?
Oh, the peaks are so many. I mean, speaking, like just being there, like hanging out with you, filming like the you know, sizzler of us cooking was actually really fun. We had some really good laughs. Going out when our speech was over, we actually, our friend from California met us out there and she took us for a fabulous dinner, found like a really cool place. And we went out to a bar afterwards and saw some live music and like did Sixth Street on Austin. I have so many peaks. Pits. My pits are, and true Natalie Tara coded, I had to drive you everywhere and you are a terrible navigator. I was like, Natalie, where are we going? Why is that? I finally just started navigating and driving and I was like, I'm taking over this situation. And so that was one. And then my flight on Monday morning was at 6 a.m. and we didn't even stay out that late, but we also had the time change this weekend. I was on Central Time instead of Mountain Time. I had to wake up at 4 a.m. to get to my flight and then drive the rental car and drop it off. And I just, that was my peak, or pit was leaving South by Southwest.
Yeah, I think my peak one that... So there's a couple of moments that really stood out to me. One was talking to people after our speech. We had the disco. He tunes into the podcast and he brought us, he was there for business. He was there for his company. He was from Portland and he brought us like famous chocolates from Portland. And that was so nice. And it was just really great to connect with everyone afterwards. It just meant so much that we had people there that like kind of knew us. I mean, we had people in the audience that obviously didn't know us and never heard of us. But we did have people there that like coincidentally happened to be at South by Southwest and came to support us. And so if that is you, if you are one of those discos that's tuning in, just thank you so much for coming to the speech. And it was amazing to connect with you afterwards. So I really loved that portion. I loved the moments after our speech talking with people. Other moments that stand out in my mind for the weekend are the moments where you and I laugh together. Like again, going back to just how much of like a best friend you are to me, like another sister you are to me.
You're going to make me cry.
It just was such, and I've talked about this a lot, but it's such a joy and honor to do what we do, but to do it next to you. Like that means even so much more. And so just those little moments of like, where we're just like crying, laughing over silly things or stupid things from the weekend. And then, yes, I agree. The cooking was like, again, just with the stress of the weekend, I feel like the cooking, that, you know, couple hours we shot that content was kind of like a reprieve from the stress. And so that was really fun. And I mean, it would be awesome, like if that, you know, sizzler, that content got us further along of where we're hoping to take the TV series and to like be able to look back on and know that we filmed that, you know, like together at South by Southwest. So I don't know. Those were all, I think, the moments that I'll take from South by Southwest and remember and cherish. My peak, we know it's my faux pas on stage. I lost sleep over it last night. I'll probably lose sleep over it one more night and then I'll be done with it. But
I know you've got to move on because I literally, when we all said it's stage, I said, I wish it had been me because you would be quicker to forgive me than you are to forgive yourself. And so offer yourself a little grace. It was 3 seconds. You survived. We did it.
So that, I guess that's our South by Southwest experience summed up. We are going to be together on stage again in April, and just actually like a couple handful of weeks, we're going to be at the Nebraska FFA, the state convention there. So it'll be the next time we take the stage together. And
I will get to visit your ranch for the first time.
Yeah, I know. That will be fun, actually. I keep kind of forgetting that that's part of it, that you'll be coming here to the ranch. So yeah, lots of still stages to grace together. But by golly, South by Southwest was a big one to do together. So congratulations to us. And
we did it. I got the hat, bought the t-shirt even. Today I'm sporting my South by Southwest gear that I got and feeling very, you know, like I already changed my LinkedIn profile to say South by Southwest speaker. So we did the damn thing.
We did do the damn thing. And we've said this multiple times, like when we have talked about South by Southwest historically on this podcast, always briefly, but we've always thanked you, discos, for being here and supporting us and being the disco community. You make it what it is. So thank you for anyone who voted. It obviously means the world to us. And we're just so grateful for this community. It's our favorite space. We love you guys. So thank you, discos.
Thank you, guys. And that will wrap us up for the longest episode in the history of disco.
And we will see you guys next Thursday.
This has been a 58 Ember production. For more shows, please visit the 58 Ember channel, 58ember.com, or find us at 58 Ember Media on socials.